You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain.
This is
Sparta, Part 1. The movie 300 and Lacanophilia. The film 300 depicts its version of the last stand of 300 Spartan soldiers against the Persian army at the Battle of Thermopylae in 480 BCE. And it did a lot to generate admiration for ancient Sparta among its viewers, and especially among martial artists. Many martial arts academies have posters on their walls depicting sweaty, bloody Spartan warriors with slogans touting the importance of courage, hard work, and toughness. But in the case of 300, and in the case of the Spartans as they actually were, and as is so often the case with cinematic depictions of history, the truth might surprise you. The film creates the misleading impression that the Spartans were passionate freedom fighters, going to war against an evil empire that wanted to take their freedom away. I realize that the producers of this movie made no claims as to historical accuracy, but instead wanted to make a visually striking adaptation of the graphic novel of the same title, produced by comic book artist and writer Frank Miller. The film uses techniques similar to those used to make a film based on another of Miller's graphic novels, Sin City. In this respect, the film is a success. It's like watching a moving comic book. My problem with the movie is that it overly idealizes the Spartans, while overly demonizing the Persians, and it does so in a heavy-handed and even creepy way. Thus, the film contributed to a new cycle of a phenomenon called Lacanophilia. Lacanophilia is the tendency to look upon ancient Sparta as a near-perfect society, with customs and values to be admired, and more importantly, to be emulated. Yes, lacanophilia is a thing with its own name, and it has been a thing for thousands of years. Plato was a lacanophile. The phenomenon gets its name from Laconia, the area of southeastern ancient Greece, which had Sparta as its capital. In today's chapter, I'll discuss this fallacy of lacanophilia. Did ancient Sparta really deserve admiration? To me, the single most significant thing that the movie leaves out of the story is the fact that Spartan society, which is portrayed as practically worshiping the concept of freedom from tyranny, only offered freedom to the very uppermost crust of its population. This privileged class made up only a tiny fraction of Spartan society, and its members were called Spartiates. The vast majority of the population was made up of, you guessed it, slaves. The slaves were called Helots. They were the descendants of prisoners of war from a rival region in southern Greece. Spartiates were exempt from, indeed they were not allowed to engage in, manual labor. Spartiate boys and young men were required to forge themselves into human weapons of war through the process called the agoge. This education is one part of Spartan culture about which many of us learn, and which many of us admire for its rigorous intensity. Spartan men who had survived and finished this education then spent their days training to stay in shape, or deployed for their prime purpose, killing enemies of the Spartan state on the battlefield. Spartan women were expected to manage affairs on the home front while the men were away at war, and to make Spartiate babies. The only way that this way of life was economically feasible was if someone else grew the food and engaged in all the other manual labor. You know, all the stuff that makes an economy work. That someone was the Helots. The Helots so vastly outnumbered the Spartiates that the Spartiates spent a great deal of time, skull sweat, and energy on the problem of how to keep the slaves under their thumb and not rebelling. That was the one thing that the pathologically brave Spartans were terrified of: slave rebellion. One answer to this dilemma was the Cryptia. The Cryptia was officially a unit of the Spartan military. It was considered an elite unit, and any Spartiate who wished to advance politically must serve in it. It was a bit like the Gestapo, the KGB, and the KKK, all rolled into one. The primary job of this unit was to terrorize, humiliate, and spy on the Helot slaves. If even a whiff of independent thinking was detected among the Helots, the Cryptia snuffed it out with extreme prejudice, frequently through lavishly brutal killings of entire Helot families. Even when there was no hint of rebellious behavior, the Cryptia was under standing orders to regularly determine who among the Helots was the most physically fit, or intelligent, or who showed leadership potential, and to kill them. When no such victims were apparently available, the thugs of the Cryptia were to regularly and arbitrarily select Helots to be killed. This seemingly random and capricious danger of being brutally murdered was designed as a form of psychological warfare to keep the Helots under control. In addition to a campaign of terror, a regular program of humiliation of the Helots was pursued as well. One example is that they were required to wear hats made of dogskin to display their status as slaves. They were also frequently singled out, forced to become drunk, then to make fools of themselves, and were then punished for having done so. This might seem like some sort of capricious fraternity hazing if it weren't for that constant threat of, you know, that sudden violent death hanging over your head thing. Picture the Spartiate elite having a laugh at the silly, terror-stricken Helots. In order to salve their conscience that their activities against the Helots were legal, the Spartan government ritually declared war on them once a year as part of a traditional festival. Man, how Game of Thrones is that? Another facet of Spartan society that might surprise you is that Sparta's economy was communist. Private property didn't exist. All labor was for the state. Good old-fashioned American commerce did not exist. Now let's move on to the film's depiction of the Persians and their empire. At one point in the film, the Persian Empire is described by a Spartan warrior as being ready to quench the world's last hope of freedom and justice. This statement is outrageous in two ways. The first is that, as I've already explained, freedom and justice are concepts that simply don't apply to Spartan society, yet the statement was made by a Spartan warrior. The other way that this statement is outrageous is the impression it gives about the Persian Empire. While certainly not a democratic institution, the real Persian Empire, not the monstrous caricature depicted in the film, had a rather light touch as ancient Near Eastern empires go. When the Persians conquered an area, they made it clear that the inhabitants' life would go on pretty much as it had before. They had very little interest in local politics or religion. As long as the citizenry paid their taxes, which were usually no more than they had been paying to the previous government, and sent troops to serve in the imperial army, which, once again, usually called for no more men than the previous government had required, the Persian imperial government pretty much left them alone and allowed them to conduct their affairs as they saw fit. A further irony, when you consider the heavily slave-based Spartan culture, is that slavery itself was illegal in the Persian Empire. As a matter of fact, one of the major reasons for the sudden and overwhelming growth and success of the Persian Empire, about a century before the events depicted in the film, was how much nicer they were to those they conquered than the empire that had come before, the Assyrians. But that's really a very low bar. The way that the Assyrians behaved in real history was atrocious, and makes the way the Persians behave in the film 300 look tame. Next episode, I'll discuss some military misconceptions that 300 fosters about the Greeks, the Persians, and the Battle of Thermopylae. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think, and check out old episodes of the Martial Brain podcast at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for the Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.